I hate to go all technical on you, but all hands on deck, swirly thing alert.
Attention.
Listen, you motherfuckers.
Buckle up, pedal heads.
You're experiencing the Lotus Effect with Phoenix and Phone Boy.
Nobody can fuck with us.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
You are my podcast, my only podcast. So if you fucking take my podcast away, I'm going to shove my foot so far up your ass.
It is out of sheer morbid curiosity I'm allowing this freak show to continue.
How do you fix that, though?
Take a big step back and literally
suck my dick.
Are you interested? I know you are, because it's fuck or walk.
You're shitting me.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
To tell you the truth, I don't give a shit.
I would not say such things if I were you.
Who the fuck are you?
Phoenix and Phone Boy?
Oh, they're horrible.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
It's wholesome smut. The whole show.
It is wholesome smut, and it's also episode 128, provisionally titled Boner Bonus, and this is The Lotus Effect, and much like the title, the show's made up, and the content doesn't matter, and of course, I am Phoenix.
Fuck you! That's my name!
Well, I see we're going out the gate today. Well, I'm Phone Boy.
That's right. We are going out the gate, and it's already gone off the rails. What rails? I don't remember any rails. All I know is it's kind of freaky.
Like this.
What is this, a freak out?
This is kind of strange.
This is terrific.
I think I'm going to be sick.
Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell aglowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes! The danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing!
We're there.
I just had an orgasm.
Well, apparently we know that's how the Lotus Effect affects Sir Bemrose. But wherever or however the Lotus is affecting you, thank you for your courage and for propagating the whole value for value. And we all know where that comes from. And wherever it's happening to you, we want to hear about it.
I got mail. Yay!
Yeah, we want to hear about it. On the dong. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, and we have shiny new handles. Phoenix at LotusEffect.social, PhoneBoy at LotusEffect.social, and she is PHEONIX. That also applies for email, Phoenix at LotusEffect.show, and PhoneBoy at LotusEffect.show. You can also, I believe you can also say, you can also call 253-237-3321.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy.
Dell Computers, this is Chip.
And of course, Chip and Ernestine are not standing by, but Google Translate is, and it'll mangle your transcript, and you'll become a show title like many of our wonderful piddleheads already have. You know, you can also send us something in snail mail. We actually got something from one of our wonderful piddleheads in the snail mail, so if you would like the address to Casa Lotus, just hit us up in the back channel. We'll be glad to provide that for you, and you can send some of that wonderful value back to us. Now, you may be wondering why you're calling 253-237-3321. Well, I'll be glad to tell you. It's so you can sound off on this or any other week's DQ topic, which this week is what has been your worst road trip? We want to hear all about it. So just call 253-237-3321 and tell us about your worst road trip or anything else you want to sound off about. And of course, you know, we play those during the Duncan Hines segment of our show. Meanwhile, it is time to talk about those who have returned some of that value back to us in what we call our return on investment segment.
We'll do anything to be rich.
Well, apparently not do enough to be rich, because if it weren't for the fact that Sir Rev Cybertucker just came in with a boostergram of 6969 sats saying, I ain't got no panties on. Yeah, I would hope not.
Shiver me timbers and boost me, bitch.
For that is the only, that's right. That is the only Oh, wait a minute. Actually, you know what? We did receive something. I take that back. This is Weedashi.
Shame on you. We did.
Weirdo. I forgot to accomplish this. So Weirdo donated, or had gone over to lotuseffect.show, hit the smash that green We Like Money button, and sent us $10.
Yeah, and he said, what is the Lotus Effect with Phoenix and Phone Boy worth to you? Turn it into a number and send it in. And that's right. Thank you, Weirdo, for being an awesome pedalhead and sending in that $10 with the message. Yeah. So do what he says, y'all. He's a cool dude.
Now that's just the standard message that I have it say. So it's nothing.
Yeah, well, either way, you could have given him credit for the fact that it's a cool ass message. Just put it into a number, send it to us. What are we worth? What is all the shenanigans that we're up to worth to you? Now, like we said, this is our return on investment segment where we discuss the return on investment that we make in the show, specifically in producing it, to be informative and entertaining. And if you listen and find value, well, like it says, send it to us in a number. Or you can send a boostagram using a podcasting 2.0 app.
Arr, shiver me timbers and boost me, bitch.
That's right. Like Sir Bemrose says, boost me, bitch. We love it. If you don't know how to do this, well, then just take off all your clothes. Go to nudepodcastapps.com. Or if you're shy, go to newpodcastapps.com.
Hey, we can podcast in the nude again. Well, not today.
Yeah, not today because we have company in the studio. But in coming weeks, yeah, we can. So if you want to support this podcasting in the nude, get yourself a podcasting 2.0 app. Like I said, new or nudepodcastapps.com. If you don't already have one, that will let you boost me, bitch, and splash the walls of Casa Lotus with Satoshis. Now, of course, you can also send feedback as a return on your investment. We talked about the whole money thing. But if you weren't sure what Phone Boy said, go to lotuseffect.show and smash that green We Like Money button to send us some of those fiat fun coupons, those cuck bucks, you know, that money that offends you, that as a charitable organization will be glad to take off your hands and put to good use, like merch. We're finding new and exciting ways to get our brand out there. So, yeah, and then, we didn't have any boostagrams from Rideshare Radio last night.
No, we did not. No, we did not.
Did we have any from Studio 33?
No, we didn't. I would have had them already in the script. That's
shame
what I'm saying.
On us. Yeah, maybe we're going to have to put a sad kitty out.
That's not
what yeah, I did. Fuck you.
Okay,
whatever.
Okay, whatever. You.
So if you want to be part of this boostagram party that no one participated in last week, and that's okay. I'm not offended because we're obviously not doing enough to earn your gold press latinum. So we're just going to have to try harder. But if you want to be a part of this, get yourself a new podcast app and join the fun.
Now, I won't say that I understand everything, but it was certainly different and... Yes, well worth a dollar.
Or whatever it's worth to you. Now, we've explained our position, so all that's left to do is just take it from Dr. Johnny Fever.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide, and say, give it to me straight, doctor, I can take it.
We actually watched some of the WKRP when we were on vacation here. It was
We did, and I'll tell you, I think I laughed harder now, because I think I get the humor even better now than I did back when we originally watched it as younger people individually.
Unfortunately, they have fucked with this show.
They have, because music rights are a thing.
Yes, because it's one of the most important elements of WKRP is the fact that it is a radio station. They play music on the radio station. The problem is that they were, you know, when they had bought cheap music rights when they purchased it, not thinking that, you know, 50 years later people might actually want to listen, want to watch the comedy gold of of WKRP, but the problem is...
And it is comedy gold.
Problem is that the songs are part of the show, and when you replace the songs with sound-alikes because you can't get the fucking rights... Oh, anyway. All right.
Now that you've had your little rant, let's just remind everyone that when you give us feedback, You need to be respectful and...
We don't want your shit.
Please don't send us your shit.
That's right. Don't give us your shit. Just give us your feedback, your praise, your criticism, but be respectful. You know how it works. You've been here long enough. So while we are on the subject...
Yeah, wait a minute. Yeah, I should maybe...
Not being muted would be a good thing.
Yes. So... So, we were going to start by going to our health segment, which is never going to be
brought to you by Pfizer.
That's right, because we can't stand those shady bastards any more than we can stand these crazy fuckers.
Oh.
Just not enough storks to keep up with them, I guess.
So, Ozempic babies? What? How the weight loss drug can interfere with birth control and boost fertility. Yay! More shit out of the Ozempic category. In this one, a new trend may have been dubbed Ozempic babies. Women are reporting on social media that they're becoming pregnant after using GLP-1 drugs like Ozempic for weight loss. Now, I personally think... that you should be very concerned if you're becoming pregnant after getting this injection. You might be concerned that your doctor is giving you a different kind of injection. I just think I should point that out. So what's going on with the Ozempic baby boom? Are GLP-1 drugs somehow able to boost fertility? Or is something else going on? So these medications slow down stomach emptying, and they affect how food and medications are absorbed. So regarding any direct effects on fertility, more research is, of course, needed. We know what that's about. Before we can say how GLP agonists affect reproductive function. Dr. Jamie Griffo, program director at NYU Langone Fertility Center in New York City and chief executive physician at Inception Facility, agreed with this assessment, saying many high BMI patients do not ovulate. Some have polycystic ovary syndrome, or PCOS, and many just don't ovulate regularly. With the weight loss from these drugs, many women who are anovulatory start to have regular ovulation and menses, which takes them from a low fertility situation to a more normal fertile state. Novo Nordisk, the maker of the Ozempic and Wegovy brands of semaglutide, which are approved for the treatment of type 2 diabetes and obesity, respectively, provided Healthline with a statement saying it's not currently known how safe these medications are for use in pregnant people.
We don't care. We don't have to.
That's right. They don't care. They don't have to. They're making millions. So those people who were either pregnant or trying to become pregnant were excluded from semaglutide trials, so not enough human data is available to establish whether semaglutide is associated with major birth defects, miscarriage, or adverse outcomes for either the mother or the baby. However, animal studies done with Wegovy suggest that there may be risks to using it. A study is looking into the safety of Wegovy during human pregnancy, and it's ongoing and not due to be completed until August of 2027. So basically, if you're taking this drug for weight loss, better double up on the Trojans and spermicidal foam, because you never know, this might be the new cough medicine.
It might be, I don't know. But I also think that, when I pulled this story, it was something it occurred to me because we were talking, because we have been, you and I have been sick the last couple of weeks, right? So we've had it.
Oh my God, like right before our week's vacation, we got hella sick.
Yeah, exactly. So, needless to say, I've had a little bit of experience lately with the stomach not necessarily, digesting stuff.
Yes,
because unfortunately stuff has had to come back out, and so I'm looking at this and going, well, if I'm having trouble now with food not getting through my system fast enough all the time, maybe I shouldn't take this drug at all. I mean, not that I was planning.
Yeah,
to anyway,
I mean, but if you think about it, okay, think about if you eat something within like an hour or so of going to bed, which you're not supposed to do, but follow my logic. If you got the fungaries and you need to put something in your stomach, in the morning when you get up, there's a really good chance that that food is still going to be undigested. And essentially, that's kind of like what this medication does, is it just kind of keeps the food hanging around in your stomach and keeps you full longer.
Yeah.
And now I guess it's interfering with birth control and could be causing some unwanted babies.
Yeah. Yeah. Meanwhile, this drug that they're making tons of money off, they think maybe, possibly, it could be made for less than $5.
300 gallons, Mr. Brown. Would you believe it?
That's pretty hard to believe.
Now, it's funny because actually I was trying to find a clip for this, and I thought it was an interesting clip to pull because he doesn't actually say $300, which is kind of what I thought when I heard it, and I realized that in context it was not the case, right? But this happens all the time, right? You take something out of context, and it might be appropriate for the context that you're using it, but it might not be the context it was intended, right? I know he was talking about Chinese water torture or something like that. I think
yes, he was.
So. So,
now, but it does, if you don't know the context, you could think it says $300.
Yeah, so we went with that. So anyway, now it costs. No, okay. I actually, in reading this article, I realized that the article was stating things that weren't actually true. It says it can be made for less than $5, but there's no basis for this anywhere, right? So. Now, here's what the article says. It says it costs Novo Nordisk less than $5 per month to produce its top-selling diabetes injection, Ozempic, even as it charges nearly $1,000 for a month's supply before insurance, according to a new study. The study, published Wednesday in the journal JAMA Open Network, raises questions about the prohibitive cost of the popular diabetes treatment and other weight loss drugs that belong to a pricey class of medications based on GLP-1 technology. Now, those medications work by mimicking a hormone we've talked about many times here called glucagon-like peptide 1, or GLP-1, which stimulates the pancreas to release insulin. When the blood sugars rise too high, slows down the emptying of the stomach and targets brain receptors involved in reducing appetite. Over the past year, demand for GLP-1 agonists has exploded despite soaring costs and limited insurance coverage options. Now, for their study, the researchers at Yale University, King's College Hospital in London, and the nonprofit Doctors Without Borders looked at the cost of manufacturing insulin and compared it with that of GLP-1 agonists. And they estimated those prices by combining manufacturing costs for the weekly injection with costs of formulation and other operating expenses, plus a profit margin with an allowance for tax.
Oh. That's a problem. That's a clip misfire.
Oh, wow.
Go on.
Okay, well, sometimes that happens. The fundamental price for a weekly dose of injectable semaglutide, the generic name for Ozempic, ranges from 89 cents to $4.73 per month. And by contrast, a vial of human insulin can be manufactured at a cost between $2.37 and $5.94 per month. Now, a month's supply of Ozempic is $935.77 for those in the United States without health insurance, according to Novo's website. The Danish company GLP-1 weight loss drug Wegovy is listed as $1,349 per month.
What?
Now, Wednesday's study concluded that GLP-1s can likely be manufactured for prices far below current prices, enabling wider access. Now, this is the kicker of this, right? In a statement on Wednesday, Novo declined to provide a production cost for Ozempic and Wegovy, meaning this article had no fucking idea whether they could make it for less than $5 or not. Now, they probably could, but...
Well, I find it interesting but not surprising that they declined to provide the production costs simply because it would prove, in my opinion, that they are completely railing the American public and everyone else when it comes to how much money they are charging for this medication in comparison to how much it costs to produce it.
Yes. Yeah. Now, it emphasizes that it invested almost $5 billion in research and development last year and will be spending more than $6 billion to boost manufacturing to meet the soaring demand for GLP-1. So,
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are some costs in doing this, but not that much. I mean, shit, you know, they're definitely making money. Do that. So, the company also noted that the out-of-pocket costs for Ozempic depend on a patient's insurance coverage, which, of course, they have no control over, well, except they own the fucking insurance companies, noting that there are different options on its website to help patients address their affordability concerns.
about not having to take the fucking drug to begin with. But anyway, that's a whole different discussion. Congress has been focused on the complexities of the U.S. healthcare system and the interplay of rebates, discounts, and administrative fees, co-pays, and deductibles, all of which play a role in creating a situation where a majority of U.S. patients covered by commercial health plans pay as little as $25 a month for their prescriptions, it said in a statement. Prescriptions to what is what I would like to know.
Yeah, and I'm telling you that I doubt that people are getting this medication for $25 a month, not on any insurance except for one you're paying out the ass for at a reputable employer.
Yes. Still, affordability challenges are real, the company said, adding that it supports policy changes to improve patient affordability and access for those living with chronic diseases. Well, okay, well, that's
again,
nice.
We don't want to address the problem by actually attacking the root cause, which is the obesity, the shit food that you're being told that you're supposed to eat abundant amounts of due to the nutrition guidelines, et cetera, et cetera. No, let's not attack the root cause. Let's not tell 600-pound Fanny that she needs to fucking stop eating the ho-hos and bonbons and get up and take a fucking walk around her living room with her walker because she's so fucking huge that she can't walk without it. No, doc, don't tell her that. Just give her another injection or prescription. That'll do it.
Yeah, and guess what? Guess where these injections came from, or the idea for them came from?
Well, I suspect you're going to tell us.
Yeah. And you're going to play the next clip? Now, before semaglutide became the darling shot of Hollywood, scientists discovered that compounds in the venom of Gila monsters could help drug developers make better diabetes medications than they ever had before. Oh, so they're literally feeding us poison. Okay, great.
Yep.
Yeah, fan-fucking-tastic. Yes. Yes, 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 motherfucking yes. Okay, it all started back in the early 1990s when government researcher Dr. John Eng discovered that Gila monsters have a special hormone in their venom. In their
venom.
Venom. Yes, I know. I was saying it wrong. And
my God.
Because I was being a dork. Yes. So, the hormone.
Did anyone else not notice the difference?
Yes. The hormone is quite similar to a hunger-regulating hormone humans harbor in the small intestine, which helps control blood sugar levels. Now, in people, it's called glucagon-like peptide 1. In Gila monsters, Eng named it Exendin 4.
What the hell is going on with these? You know, all the clips you made.
No, there's a few. There's a couple of. Yeah, I think I know what happened with the clips actually, because there was a cock up when I was making some of the clips, so I will have to go.
This information would have been helpful before going live with them.
Unfortunately, I did not realize what had happened, the full extent of what happened until just now. So you're going. I believe those two are the only clips that are going to have that problem.
Hope so.
However, I am now going to have to play that because that was a good clip. I want to fucking play that clip.
It was.
It was because I was screaming for Excedrin, and this is what I was screaming for because there was a gag that I fucked up because I didn't have the, oh my God. Okay. I can't fix this right now, but
no. So go on.
Okay. So, but it's not, because it was going to be, I was going to play an Excedrin clip and it obviously if I don't have the Excedrin clip to play, then I can't play it. So, but Excedrin 4 degrades more slowly than the human form of GLP-1 lasting for hours instead of minutes. Now that means it's a much better model for drug development since it wouldn't be practical to take a drug dozens of times a day. Now, at first, Eng tried to point this remarkable feature of Gila monster spit out to pharmaceutical makers and the government. He shopped his idea around at the Department of Veterans Affairs where he worked at the time, as well as several different pharmaceutical companies, but didn't have much success. In the end, he patented the molecule in 1995 and licensed the discovery to a now defunct biotech startup called Amylin. Now, Amylin used.
I feel like we've heard of them.
Amylin used Eng's Gila monster research to create a synthetic hormone called Exendin. Now, Exendin was approved by the Food and Drug Administration in 2005 to treat type 2 diabetes. Now, it's still used by hundreds of thousands of children with adults with diabetes today. Now, but it's still just it just blows my mind that like fucking they're basically feeding us fucking venom.
Well, okay, so here's the thing.
I mean, really?
I'm not defending government, not in this lifetime. But I will say that, like, if you get bit by a snake, the anti-venom that they give you is actually made from the venom. So in a sense, this does make a little bit of scientific sense to use the venom of an animal that lowers blood sugar in a medication meant to lower blood sugar. It kind of is a natural, I would almost go so far as to say it's a natural alternative of sort, even though it's still Big Pharma and fuck Big Pharma. It's not the worst thing that they could have come up with. It could be better. I mean, it's better than synthesized, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean.
But I think we're going to talk now about how a decade of aphasia research, what we've learned about people who can't visualize. So people who can't visualize an image in their mind's eye are less likely to remember the details of important past personal events or to recognize faces, according to a review of nearly 10 years of research. People who can't bring to mind visual imagery are also less likely to experience imagery of other kinds, like imagining music, according to new research by the academic who first discovered the phenomenon. Professor Adam Zeman of the University of Exeter first coined the term aphasia in 2015 to describe those who can't visualize. Since then, tens of thousands of people worldwide have identified with the description, including my co-host. So many say they knew they processed information differently than others, but were unable to describe how. Some of them expressed shock on discovering that other people can conjure up an image in their mind's eye.
Imagination.
Now, Professor Zeman has conducted a review of around 50 recent studies to summarize findings in a field that's emerged since his first publication. The paper is titled Aphasia and Hyperphantasia, Exploring Imagery Vividness Extremes, and is published in Trends in Cognitive Sciences. Research indicates that aphasia is not a single entity, but has subtypes. For example, not everyone with aphasia has a poor autobiographical memory or difficulty in recognizing faces. And in a minority of people, aphasia appears to be linked to autism. People who can't visualize are more likely to have scientific occupations. Unexpectedly, although people with aphasia can't visualize at will, they often dream visually. And that clip fucked up too. So Professor Zeman's review provides evidence that whether people have aphasia or hyperphantasia, a particularly vivid visual imagination is linked to variations in their psychology and neural connectivity in the brain, as well as in behavior. For example, listening to scary stories alters skin conductance in those with imagery, meaning people sweat. But this doesn't occur in people with aphasia. Aphasia is thought to affect around 1% of the population, while 3% are hyperphantastic. These figures rise to around 5 and 10% with more generous criteria for inclusion. Both aphasia and hyperphantasia are often run in families, hinting at the possibility of a genetic basis. Professor Zeman, who now holds honorary contracts at the universities of Exeter and Edinburgh, said, coining the term aphasia has unexpectedly opened a window on a neglected aspect of human experience. It's very gratifying that people who lack imagery have found the term helpful. While a substantial surge of research is shedding light on the implications of aphasia, despite the profound contrast in subjective experience between aphasia and hyperphantasia, effects on everyday function are subtle. Lack of imagery does not imply lack of imagination. Indeed, the consensus among researchers is that neither aphantasia nor hyperphantasia is a disorder. These are variations in human experience with roughly balanced advantages and disadvantages. Further, work should help to spell these out in greater detail.
Okay, so I was trying to, well, while you were reading that, I was trying to figure out what I did in the background. I'm still not exactly sure. I'm going to make, see if I can, no, it won't play the clip. Okay, so yeah, so the, I fucked up these clips. Okay, so if when we're done, you have to tell me what clips were fucked up, and then I will have to go redo them. So to make
believe sure me, I won't have a problem since my board is lit up like a Christmas tree when I hit a clip that will not fire. I don't think we'll have a problem. But continuing on, we know this clip will fire, and we know that everyone needs a penis in their asshole.
The key to life is a penis in your asshole.
And everybody also needs a doggo like this next one named Hero, who saved his owner's life, who for days was fighting off cold and coyotes before this puppy was able to get him help.
Sit, Ubu, sit. Good dog.
You take this.
Oh, I guess I need to do that. Yeah, so an Akita named Hero saved his owner's life last week in an incredible tale of loyalty and resilience that saw him remain by his side through two frigid Alberta nights, fend off coyotes, and eventually alert rescuers. Now, so winning plaudits for his name and deed the world over, a GoFundMe raised $3,000 to cover the veterinary bills off of Hero by the shelter that is helping keep him safe and warm while his owner recovers. Now, the story began with an attack. Now, when a passerby named Curtis Dahl was walking in a field of mud and grass near the sugar factory in the town of Tabor, and Hero came up and bit his dog around the neck. Now, Dahl claims he tussled with Hero for 10 minutes trying to get him off his dog, and he needed stitches on his finger by the end of it. Now, calling police and animal services with a complaint, he alerted him to Hero's presence, but when the officers arrived and saw Hero lying down exhausted near a terraced plot of grass and weeds near the road, they suddenly heard a cry for help. Yeah, that's another one of those. Yep. Yeah, apparently I need. Apparently that's several of those clips got fucked up. All right, arriving, they found a 61-year-old man on his back in a ditch, shivering and unable to move. He told police he'd been stuck there for 2 days while Hero protected him. While the man was taken to a hospital, Hero was taken to a Tabor Lost Paws Society, an animal shelter that has a special program to look after dogs during periods of crisis or injury. As it happened, the society's acting president, Alana McPhee, said they had an employee who was the injured man's neighbor, and they knew he had another Akita dog named Tora. Now, reported missing 2 days prior, Tora eventually turned up in her owner's yard with a disabled leg after screws and rods in her leg from a previous injury had come loose. They suspected she had been back and forth from the site where her owner fell to the home several times, or perhaps could have been fighting, though she had no bite or puncture marks. Now, once informed of the full story, the man whose dog had been attacked by Hero was understanding of the situation and was grateful Hero's owner was rescued. He later received compensation for the medical cost to his dog and himself via $3,000 Canadian that was raised from a GoFundMe organized by the Lost Paws Society. Now, the Hero was being protective. The dog was being protective. The dog probably had not eaten for several days. He was incredibly stressed and obviously powerless to help his owner. He had to fight off coyotes, McPhee said. That one worked. The reason why that one worked is because that one was an old clip. Now this one, I can tell you that this is going to work because I loaded it up before it was time for the Cavalcade of Stupidity from Reverend Cybertrekker, and we've got one. He says he has some.
I heard he fucked up his laptop recently. Apparently, some dickhead shipper or receiver did the thing that I can't stand, which is to knock on the fucking cab instead of the door, frightening our beloved Sir Rev Cybertrucker, causing him to knock over a can of energy drink onto the keyboard of his laptop. So we wish him speedy recovery of all of your tech, and thank you for your submissions.
And here you go. That's what he's got this week.
Heidi ho, pedalheads. This here's Sir Reverend Cybertrucker with this week's Cavalcade of Stupidity.
Robert Pickering Burnham, known by his stage name of Bo Burnham, is an American comedian, musician, actor, filmmaker, whose work combines elements of filmmaking with comedy genres such as music, sketch, and stand-up. Following his success as one of the earliest YouTube stars throughout the late 2000s, Burnham gained notability in the early 2010s for his satirical and subversive stand-up and musical comedy. Inside the Songs is a soundtrack album, produced by Bo, to accompany his film of the same name. Reaching the top 10 in the United States, Canada, Denmark, Ireland, New Zealand, Norway, and the United Kingdom, it was the best-selling American comedy album of the year and was certified gold in the United States. Disc 2, track 4, is the incomparable Welcome to the Internet, which details all of the myriad things that you can find on the world's internet. From the 2021 album Inside the Songs, this is Bo Burnham. Welcome to the Internet.
Welcome to the Internet. Have a look around. Anything that brain of yours can think of can be found. We've got mountains of content, some better, some worse. If none of it's of interest to you, you'd be the first. Welcome to the Internet. Come and take a seat. Would you like to see the news or any famous women's feet? There's no need to panic. This isn't a test. Just nod or shake your head and we'll do the rest. Welcome to the Internet. What would you prefer? Would you like to fight for civil rights or tweet a racial slur? Be happy, be horny, be bursting with rage. We got a million different ways to engage. Welcome to the Internet. Put your cares aside. Here's a tip for straining pasta. Here's a 9-year-old who died. We got movies and doctors and fantasy sports and a bunch of colored pencil drawings of all the different characters in Harry Potter fucking each other. Welcome to the Internet. Hold on to your socks, cause a random guy just kindly sent you photos of his cock. They are grainy and off-putting. He just sent you more. Don't act surprised, you know you like it, you whore. See a man beheaded, get him.
Okay.
We'll, of course, play the full version in Studio 33.
Yes, we will. Okay, so, yeah, so meanwhile, the IT issue should be resolved now that we were discussing, or it should be resolved in a few moments here, so.
Yay!
Yes, okay, so now we are at
meanwhile.
Okay, meanwhile, it's time for the Tales from Rideshare.
Which we have none of this week because Phoenix was very sick the week before last. And of course, this last week here was on vacation at her little slice of heaven cottage in Middle Tennessee. So we don't have any tales from Rideshare, sadly.
No, but we
We have a little bit of this.
Well, I'm a bum in the sun and I'm having fun. And I know you know I got no special plans.
Brought to you by Carl's Jr.
Fuck you. I'm eating.
That's right. Fuck you. We're having taco salad tonight because we have Phoenix Jr. all up in the studio and it's easy and I don't really feel like cooking. It's been a very long week, but it's been a great week. Starting with right before we left, we decided we were going to because my mom was moving into her new place as of the beginning of the month. So we wanted to spend a little special time with her. So we decided we were going to play some cards. And we found these new edibles that I think we should talk about.
Yes. Yeah. With this,
they're insanely good.
Yeah. So guys, if you can get your hands on some pure THCP.
It's literally called pure P.
Yeah, it is exactly what it's called. But it is. But yes, it is THCP, which apparently has more of the things that your body likes as far as receiving.
Basically, what it does is your body has like five cannabinoids or something like that.
Yeah, basically,
and this thing like adheres to like 10. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't remember exactly the definition. But I know is one 10 milligram gummy lasts better than 24 hours. That is no joke.
Yes. And in fact, unfortunately.
We found this out.
Yeah, we found this out. That's just,
and then actually, it kind of relates to the next two things we're talking about here. So the first thing is, like I said, we decided we're going to play some cards with my mom. And it was my turn to deal. Now there's myself, my mom, phone boy. I'm dealing myself, my mom, phone boy, and some extra ghost person that I have no idea. I'm just dealing. And phone boy's like, who are you dealing in? I'm like, what the fuck? Yeah, I had been dealing an extra hand because I was baked off my ass. And as I'm counting the cards as I'm dealing, I'm just dealing an extra person in. No idea why.
Yeah, well, I think we know why.
Because I was baked as fuck.
Yeah, the problem is that I don't think we had any idea what this was going to do to your mom.
Oh my God, my mom is constantly, can I have an edible? Can I have an edible? Can I have an edible? We're like, okay. We gave her one of the Pure Pea edibles. Y'all, this was God mode. I'm going to tell you.
Yeah.
This was not fun. Okay. Phone Boy and I are enjoying a nice high. And then we have Mom, who is completely, I mean, she's not understanding English whatsoever. Simple commands. Pick up your foot. Put your foot backwards. No. We literally had to all basically
we had to drag one her ass step upstairs.
At a time, yeah. Carry my mother up the stairs, and then attempt to get her to stand up. And I literally had a hold of the waistband of her jeans while Foam Boy had her under her arms, and we're walking her to her bed, which I assure you, trying to get a... literally. Okay. There is a skit where Robin Williams says, if you take a drunk home... Oh, good fucking luck. It's like trying to play pool with a rope. This is the truth, y'all. Trying to get my sweet, almost 70-year-old mom to just understand the concept of sit on the side of the bed. Okay, prop yourself up on the pillows. We're going to go to sleep. Or even inhale to take her medication. Yeah.
Yeah, this is...
She's looking at me going, I don't know what you're saying. And I'm like, it's English.
Yeah, let's just say the feeling I had during this is like I said, it was no joke. I mean, your mom wasn't there through some of that. I mean, she just literally was not.
Oh, she was beyond just no. Yeah. Okay, I can't even explain.
Sadly, I can. And what it is, and what it reminded me of is, it was my ex's grandmother. One of her grandmothers had actually had, she had gotten Alzheimer's.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, some of the interaction that I was having with her kind of reminded me of that. When I say it brought a lot of things into focus. Yeah, it brought that into focus. Like, yeah, this is real life here. I mean, these things, we're all about having a good time here, but at the same time, real life kicks in.
That literally ended with me in tears. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, I was literally sitting in my bed crying because I'm like, I hope she's going to be okay. I hope she just goes to sleep, wakes up in the morning, and I will tell you, this took a couple days to finally clear her system. Her to be, not in, I mean,
it takes at least a day for it to clear from my system.
Exactly. So you realize, like, my mom, who has a very low tolerance, this was very ill-advised, and at best, maybe a quarter of the gummy would have been allowed for her. Half at most, but a full? No. No.
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Yeah, wasn't what I was looking for.
Yes, no, but you fucked up.
There's what I needed, because that's how I know I fucked up hard on that one.
Yeah, well, so... Yeah, needless to say, I think that I do actually think that revealed some. We did, I mean, even though that was fucking, that was God mode for everybody involved. I mean, seriously, because I'm sitting there, like, how do you do? Yeah, how do you carry up a woman up the stairs who can't fucking, you don't want to hurt her, obviously.
No,
and she can't.
Yeah, I mean, she bruises really easily, so God forbid, I just. Oh my God, like never again. I'm never giving my mother another edible. I don't give a damn. I'm not smoking with her. I'm not giving her an edible. No. Like, I do not trust what happens when she is not with her faculties, because she seems to only have a few left.
Yeah. So yeah, that was after that. I'm going, we're not doing this again.
Yeah, that's the moment that you are like, never again, if I even think about it, just remind me of how horrible this was.
Yeah. Well, although we did have we have something nice happen other than our vacation, of course, which was,
yes.
Yeah. We're not going to say much about it other than, let's just say that I have the kind of sex life that, people only dream of.
Dude, my kid is literally sitting in studio over here. Hello?
Yes, I know. That's all I'm going to say about it.
That's still more than you needed to say?
But he already knows that anyway. He listens to the show Thursdays if
dear God.
Sundays or Saturday. What?
You don't even know when the fuck we do a show.
Saturdays at 4 p.m. There we go. Yes, I was trying to do an ad.
But the thing that is awesome, we had to go, sadly, GAC. We had to go do taxes. Fuck Joe Biden. Fuck Uncle Sam. Yeah. However, something wonderful did come out of that. You had an unexpected surprise when you went to do your taxes that ended up being a good thing,
yes,
for you.
Yeah. And so instead of owing several thousand dollars, I got several thousand dollars back, which made me very happy. And I said, well, okay, that changes my plans a little bit, because I had been I've been trying to up the computer game and stuff around here for a little while, but I'm also trying to keep the house, you know, and so I'm not trying to spend gobs of money on things that I don't need. But at the same time, yeah.
Yeah, you're
know,
still paying more than half your damn income to that heifer.
Yes, it is. But meanwhile, I have stuff here that needs to be that you know, I mean, there's a lot of tech that goes into to Shea Lotus, and the fact that I'm also trying not to use work stuff for as much anymore, because as a general rule, right? It's like, yeah, I'm trying not to mix church and state so much. And so I finally decided, well, I have a Mac for work. I should probably have my own personal Mac. And I haven't owned a Mac of my own that was actually mine, that was purchased by me for about 20 years. Actually, my ex bought the last one as a birthday gift in 2006, I think. But that's the last Mac that of my own that I've owned that it's not,
yeah,
been
with
like,
your fucking money.
With my fucking money. So, yeah. So, but I actually bought.
So, in a sense, you bought it yourself.
Yes. Well, I bought I didn't just buy one MacBook. I actually bought two, right? Because so the computer you sit in front of during the show was an old MacBook that I'd had from, it was my previous one from work. The problem it had was, first, it was, yeah, for what you use it for, it's probably more than sufficient of a computer, even though it's not running the most recent version of Mac OS, and it's still. It's still fine, but actually Walmart has the MacBook that I have for work is actually MacBook Air, and it's an M1 based it's from a couple of years ago. But I will tell you that in terms of a laptop, it barely generates any heat. I mean, it's amazing, and it's also got battery life that's, you know, it'll last several hours on a battery, pretty, you know, no problem. So I said, okay, well, I definitely want to buy a MacBook Air for myself. I bought one of the newer ones, but for the computer that you're using, I said, you're not really doing much with it, and you know, they're selling these things for $699, and that's probably going to be more computer than you need, and it will replace the janky USB ports and all that stuff, and so. And I bought that on the way home yesterday from the cottage. I'd stopped at Walmart, and they actually had one in stock. So,
yeah, and the guy said it was the first one he had ever sold.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. So I blew a lot of money on Apple hardware yesterday. You're the one who's benefited from it so far. I decided I was going to. I ended up ordering it off Amazon.
Yes, I am.
And it'll be here, you know, by the next show, most likely. But the idea being that, yeah, so needless to say, I decided, okay, I can actually do this. This is something I've been wanting to do for a while. I've been trying to get again, trying to, because I still got a lot of computers here from, well, the previous times. So I kind of want to get rid of all of that stuff at some point. But you know, the practicality of it is that it's not that important. important in the grand scheme of things. So I'm doing it a little bit at a time. But I thought this was important because, yeah, it's also part of the show. You know, honestly, we use it for the show. So, and the problem I was having with the clips, yeah, that part of it is because I've been doing. I'm using a different computer to do the clips than I normally use. I probably could have done them on the iPad, but I'd had the Windows machine up, and so that's what I was using. And unfortunately, I'd fucked up several clips in the process. So this, I won't even get into what I did, but it's like this is why I need my computer back, folks, because I can use Windows, I can use Linux, I can use Mac, but I really don't like Windows. So, and unfortunately, this is one of those things. So yeah, the Windows machine will get repurposed for something else, I'm sure. But next week, I hope I will have my new MacBook Air with an M3 based processor. So, and it's, but said it'll last up to 18 hours on battery. I'll believe that when I see it. But anyway, it is the last computer that I have purchased in, you know, probably like 20 years. And now granted, I've been spending my money on phones and that kind of thing. And the phones are more expensive than computers these days. I mean, a decent computer is going to cost you more than a phone. But of course, phones are also, you know, you can also spend that much on a phone these days. I mean, it's just kind of crazy what you can spend the money on. But anyway.
The one I had when you and I got together was worth more than what this cost.
Yeah, that's true. Yes. And in fact, we still have it.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm not getting rid of it.
Yeah, I know. It's
that's an expensive ass phone, and it's still very viable. All I'd have to do is throw a SIM card in it and run off Wi-Fi.
Ooh. Actually, you don't even need to have a SIM card in it. You just run it off Wi-Fi.
Good point.
Yeah,
but nonetheless, yes, your amount of money that you have given to the Apple cult in the last 24 hours is pretty excessive.
Yeah, but I've also paid some stuff off too. So this was
yes, you know, you have. So
including some other Apple cult stuff. So yes, then I'm debating the next purchases, but I'm going to wait. You know, so I'm doing some scheming now. But meanwhile, now that I've got a little more breathing room financially speaking, I can. You know, I'm in a good situation now. And also to celebrate that, now we also did two other things. We did two other important things because we were in Knoxville. Because
we were.
Yeah. Now we don't normally we don't make a habit of going to Knoxville. However, now your tax person that you trust and we've gone to her a couple times now and I trust her. So your trusted tax professional happens to be in Knoxville. So we go to Knoxville, right?
Well, also
we decided to do a few other things while we were in Knoxville. So we went.
Maximize the trip.
Yeah, and I said, well, since taxes turned out the way it did, we went to McKay's, and so I spent $200 on vinyl.
No regrets.
No regrets whatsoever. In fact, we've been kind of playing it. I played some of it. I played songs from a bunch of it. I still haven't even listened to all of it yet because we've been.
Well, and now that we have our house back, we'll be playing a lot more vinyl.
Yes, that's true. So now we also decided to go to Brazero's, which is our local
Brazilian
steakhouse. Yes, and got his and hers meat sweats.
We did.
Yes, we did. And it was great. It was nice to. Yeah, and you know, and as a reminder of something that says, well, yeah, this is not, you know, because you commented on how much I paid for the meal, and I kind of looked at it and went, all right, whatever, you know, it is what it is, right? And it's this.
It was part of getting used to, and we talked about this in Vegas also, it's getting used to living that lifestyle now, which I'm not used to.
Yeah, so this is, yeah, when we talk about living the lifestyle, it's like, honey, yeah, if you're going to live this lifestyle, you kind of have to be, I mean, not that I'd like to make a habit of dropping a couple $100 on a meal, but I don't blink when I have to do it. I don't blink because it's just something that it's just something it's part of what happens. So
you call it the cost of doing business.
It's a cost of doing business, exactly. Which speaking of which, I need to actually have some things to write down. Things called show titles because we haven't had any. The cost of doing business is something I've got to write down as a potential.
Yeah, that's actually a good show title. So we are actually going to transfer into our Duncan Hines segment.
The world needs a wake-up call. We're going to phone it in.
That's right. And hopefully you'll phone it in to 253-237-3321 and tell us about the worst road trip you ever had. We want to hear all about it. There's plenty of time. 253-237-3321.
And we'll open up the phone lines after we play this voicemail that we got from one of our regular pedal heads.
Dude,
We're experiencing the Lotus effect. Sorry to say Phoenix there. Anyway, well, you guys got a weekend off. Congrats. Enjoy. But I figure I'm remembering to call, and I might as well just do it now. And maybe then I'll forget next week and leave two. Or you'll have two. Anyway, hello, fun boy. Hello, Phoenix. Worst car or worst road trip? Hey, dude, I feel like, yeah, I don't really have a lot of, like, worst. I mean, most of them were pretty fun, and we never went super far, because my pop's work, would usually kept them within a few hours of traveling, or, like, for vacation and stuff like that growing up. That's honestly, like, probably the most road trips I think of. But, yeah, I mean, a few hours or whatever is not a big thing. And obviously, like, Phoenix did a lot of driving with the truck and whatnot, and then you guys went cross-country and all that jazz. But, yeah, to me it's just more of, like, the vehicle you're in. We had one a couple of years ago. We went with my family, and we went to big old park and whatnot, and it was, I don't know, decent amount of hours away, and like they rented a van, and it was one of those, like, I think it was like literally like for an Asian country kind of thing, because of just how the seat room and whatnot was, and then like everything is just bolted straight to the chat or straight to the thing, and was like not shocks on the seats and whatnot, and then I'm over 6 feet, and so I'm like in the very back, so my feet can kind of go down a row just so I have leg room, and then like I just feeling like every bump, so like my back was just. Usually I'm fine, but yeah, it was just not fun. And then on the way back, I just tried to do my best just to sleep through the whole entire thing and whatnot, because just uncomfortable. But yeah, I really had a bad road trip. And yeah, I think it's kind of like, as long as the vehicle's comfortable and company, obviously, because I know that can be a factor. I've heard enough of those where, you know, maybe something's going on or something goes on during the trip, and then just, you know, not a pleasant time and lack of communication and whatnot, but anywho, and then plus you look back and then like, oh, that was actually kind of fun, you know, to talk about. So anyway, love you guys. Stay dangerous. And whether or not you're here this week or you're not, go ahead and give a hearty cuckoo.
Cuckoo. Anyway,
thank you, Mr. Christopher Battles. Yeah, I can imagine, God, traveling really long distance in an uncomfortable van would have to be craptastic. We have opened the phone line, so if you want to call in 253-237-3321, feel free to call in live and tell us about your worst trip. Let's hear from you, phone boy. You've traveled extensively, especially with work. What's your worst road trip?
Well, okay, when I think of road trips, I don't tend to think of trips in airplanes. I tend to think of road trips in terms of like vehicles, right? So that's just
true. But how many of those have you taken?
I've had my share of them. I mean, you know, there's as a kid, my you know, my mom used to drive out to go see her brother in like northern California, middle, you know, Alturas, which is like, you know, way up there, you know. Anyway, it was long drives for that. We would go to I think that the time we went to Disneyland, I think she drove down there, if I remember right. And so, I mean, as a kid, we did it. And also, like, I moved I moved up to Washington State on a road trip, so to speak. We drove a fucking U-Haul or something by the way, during it was still kind of vaguely winter too, so it was not the easiest. That was probably, but yes, also driving with her was probably not the easiest.
No doubt.
Yeah, well, the only reason the trip wasn't bad is because we were in separate vehicles. So I didn't, and we didn't have cell phones back then, because it was 1990 mumble, right? So the actual like drive was okay, right? Because I didn't have to deal with her, you know. But anyway, that's the worst road trips were the driving across when we lived in Spokane and had to drive to Seattle to go see her folks. those trips were terrible, especially when there was snow involved. So
that's, no doubt.
Yeah. So, there was a couple of times we had to take hotels on the way back, and that were, and yeah, trying to do that with small children. Yeah. Anyway, not so great. So that would be considered my worst. If we're talking about road, I consider road trip, like, you know, driving on the road, not flying so much, but that's just me. I don't know.
That's fair. That's a fair statement.
Okay. So how about you?
Well, I would have to say that my worst road trip, oh God, the one of recent that I, because I've had a few road trips that kind of sucked for various reasons, but the one where we decided that it would be a great idea, you know, because we were fucking not well off, because my ex was disabled and a douchebag, but anyway. We decided, because we were taking a cruise that left out of the port in Miami, oh, let's drive from let's drive from Tennessee down to Park. Oh, we have a call. Yes. Hello, caller.
Hello, caller. You're on the air with Phoenix. Yeah, with Phoenix and Boat Boy.
What's up, guys? How are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Phoenix, you were with me when this happened. We were going from New York to New Jersey.
When we moved and that asshole hit the dad's truck?
Uh-huh.
Oh, God, yeah.
That was the worst one ever. Worst road trip.
And the piss is, dad had literally just said, don't let anything happen to my truck. I had to practically beg the man to let me use the fucking thing. And then this jerk off, not paying attention, slams into the back of the truck, and I've got to try to figure out how to explain to my dad why his fucking truck has now been involved in an accident. Although I have to say, to his credit, he did take it quite well. It kind of wasn't our fault. That was that whole Firestone tire recall thing.
Yeah, but you had walked across the two lanes to go use the 911 thing. I didn't hear where you were yelling. And I walked across the two lanes. If I didn't, you know where I would have been.
Oh, yeah. You would have totally been pinned in between the car and the truck. There's no doubt.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely.
The fact you had been up in the back of that truck. You had been in the back of the truck before you got out and were standing at the back of it. So either way that scenario played out, if you hadn't come across those two lanes, would not have been good, because you'd have gotten thrown out of the fucking bed of that truck undoubtedly, and probably into a live lane of traffic.
Because that little Honda moved your dad's, what was it, 250 or 350?
Actually, I think it was a 350. It was a big sumbitch.
Yeah, but a little Honda, that's how hard it hit. It moved your dad's truck into traffic.
Yeah.
Remember?
Oh yeah. It solidly moved that fucking truck, and also embedded a piece of the blinker light in between the trailer hitch, which I thought was interesting. It took a lot to get that piece out, from what I remember.
Yeah. So yeah, that was the worst road trip I was ever on. I'll never forget it.
Yeah, that definitely is not something that has ever left my mind. That was such a pain in the ass road trip to have to undertake, even though it was only like, what, 4 hours drive from where we lived to my parents?
Not even. It was probably like an hour and a half, 2 hours.
No, it was more than that.
From where we were. But yeah, somebody was on my side that day.
But yeah, it was fucking, well, we were tired too, you know. Having to drive up there to get the truck to drive back, because we were doing like a hurried move. It was just, oh my God, it was such a nightmare.
Yeah. But somebody was on my side that day. I tell you.
Oh, yeah.
But, all right. I figured I'd call and let you know my worst one.
Oh, well, we appreciate it, Wookie.
All right. Not a problem. I guess I'll talk to y'all later.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Bye.
All right. Bye.
Well, thanks, Wookie, for calling in. Appreciate it.
That's right. But yeah, that drive down to Miami from here in the truck, where it was like me, the ex, my little munchkin when he was little enough to still fit in between the ex and I.
Yeah.
And then my mom, my oldest, and the Wookie, all in my Dodge extended cab. This was not a comfortable ride. This was a long fucking drive. By the end of it, when we finally got down there, it was like, you know what? You stay on your side of the world and I'm going to stay on mine for just a little while. Because like being pent up in that truck with all that energy and all those people was insane.
Yeah, I would say so. But so I think we are I think we've gotten through the Duncan Hines segment, have we not?
We have. So mind you, you can still call 253-237-3321 and weigh in on what your worst road trip is. We'll keep the phone lines open throughout the rest of the show and you can feel free to call in and weigh in.
Yeah, meanwhile, I think we all need to have a little bit of this.
I'll take a drink, and my name's Smoke Little Reef. You know, I like to smoke reefer. You know, it relaxes me and everything. A couple of doobies, you know, just to get you through the day and everything. But I do not freebase cocaine.
They don't freebase cocaine in Germany either.
No, they don't. But
the goddamn Germans got nothing to do with it.
And actually, in this case, they do have something to do with it, because the German government last week adopted a bill to end the prohibition of cannabis for adults that will make possession and home cultivation of weed legal in Europe's most populous nation as of April 1st. So not an April Fool's joke. Here we go. The legislation, which also allows for the establishment of cannabis clubs, was given final approval on Friday in the Bundestag, Germany's legislative chamber representing the country's 16 federal states. The bill has already been approved by the second chamber of parliament, known as the Bundestag, which voted to pass the legislation late last month. Okay, that I know you can play that clip over there, honey. You're yeah.
Smoke weed every day.
Yeah, she's doing what the clip says, by the way.
Sorry, got caught token.
That's right. And this is in a new. Oh, you know this. By the way, that bong is something else. That bong.
We'll post a picture.
Yeah, we'll have to post a picture of it. Trust me, I looked at this and went, how the fuck do you clean that thing? Well, anyway. Under the limited legalization bill known as CAN-G, adults age 18 and up will be permitted to possess up to 25 grams of marijuana and store up to 50 grams of weed at home beginning on April 1st. The measure also permits adults to grow as many as 3 cannabis plants at their residences. Now,
this is some really great legislation. I want to say, they really gave them a lot of leeway in what's legal over there. So kudos to Germany.
Yeah. On July 1st, Germany's weed legalization plan will begin permitting non-commercial cannabis clubs, where members will have access to legally cultivated marijuana. Now, each cannabis club will be limited to no more than 500 members. The legislation does not include provisions that allow for-profit recreational marijuana producers or retailers, which is interesting. So before Friday's vote, the leaders of several federal states called for a mediation committee to be convened to resolve disputes over the legislation with the Bundestag. Now, had the mediation plan committee been called, the enactment of the cannabis legalization plan would have been delayed likely by about 6 months. Yes. Now, the states raised concerns about an amnesty provision in the law that requires judicial review of tens of thousands of past cannabis cases, fearing the process would overwhelm the courts. Some also criticized the maximum cannabis possession amount as too high and called for weed prohibition zones near schools and kindergartens.
Wait a minute. Isn't a kindergarten a school?
Yeah, well, a motion.
Sorry, I thought that was just redundant.
Yeah, a motion to convene a mediation committee was offered, but did not gain the number of votes needed for approval. Now, the Bundestag then voted to approve the plan to legalize cannabis in Germany, which will join Malta and Switzerland in the small group of European nations that have approved limited cannabis legalization plans. Now, Niklas Kuparanis, the CPO and co-founder of Frankfurt-based medical cannabis company Bloomwell Group, says that the legalization of adult-use cannabis in Germany will also have a significant impact on the nation's existing medical marijuana industry. While there are now an estimated 200,000 to 300,000 medical cannabis patients in Germany, Kuparanis says that the number is likely to increase by as much as 10 times when reclassification goes into effect. While it will probably take some time before the first licensed clubs, permitted under the new law, produce significant amounts of recreational cannabis, the CAN-G is the best news for the German medical cannabis industry since the Cannabis as Medicine law passed in March 2017, Kuparanis wrote in a statement to High Times.
It's a step in the right direction after all.
Starting April 1st, medical cannabis will no longer be classified as a narcotic. It can now be prescribed by physicians as completely normal prescriptions, such as antibiotics or high-dose ibuprofen, he added. This reclassification significantly reduces costs and other administrative burdens to access from cultivation to further processing and distribution to storage to dispensing in the pharmacy. Now, the limited cannabis legalization bill adopted on Friday is considered the first pillar of Germany's cannabis policy reforms. Politico reports. The second pillar is expected after the decriminalization plan is in effect and will consist of five-year municipal pilot programs for state-regulated cannabis to be sold at licensed retailers.
Henry VIII made each farmer in Old England grow their share because they knew if you want the strongest natural fiber there is, you all got to do your part for the king and grow more pot.
All right, I have to, okay, so a side digression here. I will be playing in Studio 33 what that came from. It's by Jello Biafra. It's actually something that one of my college roommates had introduced me. It's a 13-minute discussion about the benefits of marijuana. Now, granted, this was done in the late 80s, I believe.
It's very informative.
Yes, and I was playing this for Phoenix here, and I realized that she did not have the benefit of this liberal arts upbringing. My first roommate is a freshman. The guy was a fucking asshole. Let's just rich entitled asshole, and he acted like it. The other guy was, well, he at least acted punk, but he was he was a cool dude. That was one of the things. Yeah, that's where I learned that particular track from. So meanwhile, I got to leave it to the state of Tennessee.
But we're winning the war on drugs. We're winning the war on drugs.
So you gotta love this. Proposed Tennessee rules seek to close a loophole on THCA. Fucking assholes. So proposed rules to regulate hemp in Tennessee could put a limit on the total amount of all forms of THC allowed in products, potentially closing what some see as a legal loophole that's led to the marketing of hemp flower high in THCA. When smoked, THCA converts to Delta-9 THC, the cannabinoid primarily responsible for the psychoactive effects of weed. So in April 2023, Tennessee lawmakers passed legislation to regulate and tax hemp products grown, manufactured, and sold in the state. Under the bill, the Tennessee Department of Agriculture was tasked with developing rules to govern the industry, including regulations for product testing, compliance, and enforcement. In December, the department released a draft proposal of the new rules mandated by the legislation. The 2018 Farm Bill legalized hemp at the federal level, defining hemp as cannabis that contains no more than 0.3% Delta-9 THC, which we all know is a bullshit number. Using this definition, many hemp growers have begun producing cannabis that's high in THCA, a cannabinoid that is converted to Delta-9 THC when subjected to heat through a process known as decarboxylation. Federal regulations require hemp to be tested for THC content within 30 days of harvest, using a test that combines the amounts of Delta-9 THC and THCA using a specific formula to determine total THC. Cannabis with more than 0.9, boy, I wish. Cannabis with more than 0.3% total THC at testing time is considered marijuana under federal law and is still illegal. Boo. Some hemp growers, however, have developed agricultural processes and strains of cannabis that do not express high levels of THCA till late in the 30-day testing window. By testing early in the window, growers can produce hemp flower that complies with regulations at testing time but has high levels of THCA after harvesting and packaging. As a result, THC hemp flower is available in many states that have not legalized cannabis, despite the fact that it's psychoactive when smoked or vaped.
Goddamn too high, goddamn too high, goddamn too high.
So the companies marketing these products argue that they comply with the Farm Bill and thus are legal. Others, however, see this interpretation as a loophole that's likely to be closed. Already, several states have taken steps to regulate hemp cannabinoids. The new rules proposed by the Tennessee Department of Agriculture would redefine hemp by requiring finished products to have no more than 3% total THC. Hemp advocates say the rule would make many THCA, Delta-8 THC, and CBD products that are available now illegal, with devastating effects on the state's hemp growers and retailers. And I agree with that. If they lower the already bullshit 0.3% amount, look, bottom fucking line, folks, just fucking legalize it. Stop pussyfooting around. Stop making it like, oh, we're going to throw you a little breadcrumb, but then we're going to take it back. Just cut the shit out. 50 state, federally legal. That's what we want. Cut the shit. And on the subject of cutting the shit, this bitch really needs to cut the shit.
Yeah, Vice President Kamala Harris on Friday will meet at the West Wing with cannabis policy. Yeah, we do mean, yes, we do mean that Kamala Harris.
Yes, Camel Toe Harris.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I forgot we have a peanut gallery in the studio today. So
we do.
Yeah, no issue. So she will meet. I almost said he. Yeah. Was,
hey, Truth wants to come out.
Yeah. So Kentucky governor. So she wants to meet with Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear and rapper Fat Joe, who received a pardon for a federal cannabis conviction from President Biden.
This must be fucking nice.
Yeah. Friday's engagement will build on the vice president's efforts to uplift the historic actions the Biden-Harris administration have taken to ensure everyone has access to opportunity, including making the criminal justice system more just. We must do that. This will continue in the weeks and months to come, a White House official said, according to a report from NBC News. You know.
We know how reputable they are.
No, that's right. So another pardon recipient, cannabis activist Chris Goldstein, a regional coordinator with the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, i.e. NORML, will also attend. In 2014, he was convicted of a federal marijuana possession charge for smoking marijuana during a protest in an outdoor area of Independence Hall National Historic Park in Philadelphia. The streets of Philadelphia. You know, the clip that I would have put there would have been Philadelphia Freedom by
then you should have fucking said something.
That's okay, but that's fine. There's nothing wrong with
it. I totally forgot about Elton John. I should be spanked, but then again, I might like it.
That's the after party, honey. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So these presidential pardons are a powerful and meaningful action, Goldstein said in a statement from NORML. They carry a tremendous power of goodwill, not just to those who receive them, but for the entire country. These pardons are seen by people everywhere as tangible signs of the White House taking action on marijuana policy. They're not taking action on any fucking
bullshit.
Thing else. Yeah, exactly. So
you want to take action? Fucking 50 state federally legal. That's all. None of this bullshit, namby-pamby, giving pardons to rich fucking rappers and advocates. Legalize it. 50 state federally. Set it. Don't regret it.
All right, can you blow that shit up, please?
No.
Yes, please blow it up. Hit the next fucking clip. We're at the back of the napkin.
No, you missed.
Yes, I'm.
That.
Yes, I'm skipping it because I'm.
If you had told me.
Yeah,
that.
I'm done. That's why. Yeah, you should have cut. You had it picked up my cue. If I'm obviously skipping it, then I'm obviously skipping it. Yes, I'm obviously skipping.
Will you tell me to blow it up? But
blow
you don't
it
tell
up.
Me
yes,
what
the
I'm
laptop
up.
Of terror. This is
well,
what.
Well, now I know what I'm blowing up.
Yes. Now, meanwhile, these apps did just want to eat your brains, I think. Now, your smartphone might be part of a proxy network, and you might not even know it. All it takes is for you to download apps whose developers have included the functionality and didn't mention it.
I'm sleeping with Joan Collins and I don't even know it.
I'm glad that clip worked. Now, if that doesn't sound so bad, you should know that being part of a residential proxy network means that your device might be the last mile of a threat actor's traffic before they access a victim's environment. Womp womp. As recently researched by Human Security's Satori Threat Intelligence Team has revealed, researchers Google removing a single free VPN app from its Play Store due to it making devices part of a proxy network used for ad fraud revealed a more widespread problem, in fact. That wasn't bad enough. The library responsible for the proxy node enrollment has subsequently been found in many more applications, as well as one mobile software development kit. Now, misleading users who install third-party software is just one of the ways in which residential proxy networks, which usually consist of computers, smartphones, and IoT devices, well, the way they're grown.
You.
Now, some users are voluntarily install proxyware to enroll their devices in these networks and exchange their bandwidth in return for payment. Now, and then there's attackers out there secretly installing proxyware on compromised user devices. We got a story about that coming up next, too. Now, to be sure, right, residential proxy networks can be used for non-illicit objectives. Advertisers, for example, can use them to check which ads play depending on an IP geolocation. And they can also be used to register multiple accounts and on the same online service. But in a recently released report by Sequoia.io and Orange Cyber Defense, the researchers pointed out that the residential proxies represent a growing threat in cyberspace, frequently used by attacker groups to hide among legitimate traffic, to mount password spraying and brute force attacks, phishing campaigns, DDoS attacks, and more. Yes, they also analyzed the rather opaque market of residential proxy sellers and discovered that a lot of the providers are either not registered as official legal entities in their respective countries. Gee, what a fucking surprise there. Or possess only mailbox offices in a country without stringent legislations on the topic. For example, the British Virgin Islands. Some providers don't even have websites and prefer to sell their services directly through Telegram. Also, many of the providers don't identify and verify the client's identity when getting an account to make sure the proxies are used for legal purposes. Instead, they cover themselves by stating in the terms of service that customers are responsible for the activity done with the rented proxies and they must abide by all applicable laws. Yeah, you know.
Hypocrisy, anyone?
Yeah, well. Yeah, meanwhile, you know, we want to talk about devices that are compromised. Yeah, so a new variant of the Moon malware botnet has been spotted infecting thousands of outdated small office and home office routers at IoT devices in 88 countries. The Moon, not to be confused with the guy on Shit Poster Club, is linked to the Faceless Proxy Service, which uses some of the infected devices as proxies to route traffic for cyber criminals who wish to anonymize their malicious activities.
You are being watched. The government has a secret system, a machine that spies on you every hour of every day.
Yeah, well, Black Lotus Labs, I like that in the article. Researchers,
yeah, me too.
Yeah, Black Lotus Lab researchers monitoring the latest The Moon campaign, which started in early March 2024, have observed 6,000 ASUS routers being targeted in under 72 hours. The threat analysis report that malware operations such as the Iced ID and Solar Marker currently use the proxy botnet to obfuscate their online activity, kind of like the last story. Now, The Moon was first spotted in 2014 when researchers warned that the malware was exploiting vulnerabilities to affect Linksys devices. I've got a clip that goes with this, right? The malware's latest campaign has been selectively seen affecting nearly 7,000 devices a week, with the Black Lotus Lab saying that they primarily target ASUS routers. Now, the researchers did not specify the exact method used to breach the ASUS routers, but given the targeted device models are end of life, it is likely that the attackers are just leveraging known vulnerabilities in the firmware. Now, they may also brute force admin passwords or test default and weak credentials. Now, once the malware gains access to a device, it checks for the presence of specific shell environments, and otherwise it stops the execution. If a compatible shell is detected, the loader decrypts, drops, and executes a payload named .nttpd, which creates a PID file with a version number, 26 currently. Now, next, the malware sets up IP tables rules to drop incoming TCP traffic on ports 80, 80, and 80, you know, they're doing a good security thing, while allowing traffic from specific IP ranges. This tactic secures the compromised device from external interference, because obviously we can't have somebody else checking the device out. The malware next attempt to contact a list of legitimate NTP servers to detect sandbox environments and verify internet connectivity. Now, finally, the malware connects with the command and control server by cycling through a set of hard-coded IP addresses in the C2 response with instructions. In some cases, the C2 may instruct the malware to retrieve additional components like a worm module that scans for vulnerable web servers on ports 80 and 8080, or .sox files that can proxy traffic on the infected device.
It all comes down to this. Can the little Jewish boy reason with the internet, or will it be gone forever?
Yes. Can he reboot the Linksys router that is the internet? Yes, and in fact he did. That was one of the best episodes of South Park ever. just saying about that. Now, this is Oh, it's interesting. This is an interesting thing you may need to that you may not realize. Now, so, and this is something I personally encountered today. So, or yesterday. So when I bought a new laptop. This new laptop that Phoenix is using, and yeah, it did not have the latest software on it. It was not even the most current version. So, you know, but apparently Apple seems to think that they can update their iPhones in the box with. Yeah. When you buy a new iPhone, there's usually a software update waiting to be installed as part of the setup process. And anything that was released between the time the iPhone left the factory and got into your hands. Now, in the case of the iPhone 15, that update was critical if you wanted to transfer data from an old device. And I actually ran into this doing swapping people's phones around. I had to do it. I had to upgrade phones before I could do it. So, but spending 20 minutes downloading an update before you can play with your new phone is, in fact, a bummer. So what do you do? Well, now Apple's response is that it appears to be building a machine with one job and one job only, wirelessly updating iPhones. The image published by iGeneration shows two of these machines stacked one on top of the other, each with six slots. Each compartment has markings to help correctly align phones of different sizes.
Ah, I see you have the machine that goes bing!
Now, according to Bloomberg's Mark Gurman, now Presto uses MagSafe and other wireless technologies to turn the phone on, apply the update, and turn it off again. Now, it's not totally clear what the tech is using and when, and then iGeneration mentions NFC is involved, but it's still pretty dang neat. Now, an earlier report from iGeneration also mentions that the machines are connected to specific servers that can access software updates 24 hours ahead of their general release. Now, Gurman says that Presto machines are in limited testing in the U.S. with wide deployment planned for April. So as you're listening to this, so if you buy a new iPhone from Apple after April and it comes with the latest OS version installed on it, you'll have Presto to thank. Well, I mean, I guess, you know, that. But I look at this. The reason I covered this story is not because it's even that interesting. It's at this point, when you buy a tech device, it's almost a given that you're going to have to. It needs to see the internet and has to do an update before you can spend any time playing with it. But I'm looking at this as a security issue. I'm going, okay, if Apple can do this without taking the phone out of the box, what's to prevent a hacker from doing it?
That's a really good question. You know, I notice it says MagSafe. That's the cases that we have that you have your pop socket and the charging wallet and all that with.
Yes. Yeah, the reason, it's because it is, MagSafe is, it takes into account the fact that they've got this wireless induction charging. It probably affects it. But anyway, now.
I was just pointing out the fact that the name of it.
Yeah, I got you. Now, you had pointed this article out to me, and it's actually an excellent example of a software supply chain attack.
Can we forget about the hack we suffered just last week?
Now, a lone Microsoft developer rocked the world when he revealed a backdoor had been intentionally planted in XZUtils, an open source data compression utility available on almost all installations of Linux and other Linux-like or Unix-like operating systems. The persons or people behind this project likely spent years on it. They were likely very close to seeing the backdoor update merged into Debian and Red Hat, the two biggest distributions of Linux, when an eagle-eyed software developer spotted something fishy.
Fish!
Today's fish is trout a la creme. Enjoy your meal.
Now, this might be the best executed supply chain attack we've seen in the open, and it's a nightmare scenario. Malicious, competent, authorized upstream in a widely used library, software and cryptographer engineer Filippo Valserrada said of the effort, which came frightfully close to succeeding. Now, Andreas Friend, a developer and engineer working on Microsoft's Postgres SQL offerings, was recently troubleshooting performance problems at a Debian system to devices over the internet. Specifically, SSH logins were consuming too many computer CPU cycles and were generating errors with Valgrind, a utility for monitoring computer memory. Through sheer luck and Friend's careful eye, he eventually discovered the problems were the result of updates that had been made to XZUtils. On Friday, Friend took to the open source security list to disclose the updates were the result of someone intentionally planting a backdoor in the compression software.
And I would have made millions if it hadn't been for you meddling kids.
Yes, it's hard to overstate the complexity of the social engineering and the inner workings of the back door. Now, Thomas Orokia, a researcher at Microsoft, published a graphic on Mastodon that helps visualize the sprawling extent of the nearly successful endeavor to spread a back door with a reach that would have dwarfed the SolarWinds event from 2020. Guys, yeah, a lot of things use SSH, and if it's coming from one of the major distributions, yeah, that I can assure you that this article is not incorrect in the sense that a lot of things actually use it. Now, malicious code was added to XCUtils version 5.6.0 and 5.6.1, modified the way the software functions. Now, the backdoor manipulated SSHD, the executable file used to make remote SSH connections. Anyone in possession of a predetermined encryption key could stash any code of their choice in an SSH login certificate, upload it, and execute it on the backdoor device. No one has actually seen code uploaded, so it's not known what code the attacker planned to run. In theory, the code could allow for just about anything, including stealing encryption keys or installing malware. In a nutshell, it allows someone with the right private key to hijack SSHD, the executable file responsible for making SSH connections, and from there to execute malicious commands. The backdoor is implemented through a five-stage loader that uses a series of simple but clever techniques to hide itself. It also provides the means for new payloads to be delivered without major changes being required. In an online interview, the developer and reverse engineer H.D. Moore confirmed the Sam James suspicion that the backdoor targeted either Debian or Red Hat distributions, which if you're looking at a packaging, and this is, so the attack was sneaky in that it only did the final steps of the backdoor if you were building the library on AMD 64, otherwise known as Intel x86 64-bit, and were building the Debian and RPM package instead of using it for a local installation, he wrote. Now, the basic scheme was to sneakily backdoor the release tarballs, but not the source, use sock puppet accounts to convince various distributions to pull the latest version and package it, and then profit once a distribution shipped it and was in use by the target organization.
Missed it by that much.
Yeah, well, let's say that does happen. You know, this obviously does happen, and this is, you know, this is why I have a day job, I guess. And it keeps happening.
Exactly.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I think it's time for the junk drawer.
Humanity was incapable of solving even its most basic problems, like garbage, which had been stacked for centuries.
Oh, honey, you got to take this story.
Oh, I will. So the immunity was rejected for a Tennessee deputy who turned a traffic stop into an impromptu baptism.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government.
Y'all are not going to believe this shit. This case arises from a traffic stop that ended like no other which we are aware of. So Deputy Daniel Wilkie stopped Chandel Marie Riley, suspecting that the window tint on her car was too dark. By the end of their encounter, Wilkie and Riley were discussing religion, which led to the deputy's baptism of the suspect in a lake.
The power of Christ compels you! The power of Christ compels you!
Yeah, that's a thing that actually happened. After being stopped for violating Deputy Wilkie's favorite pretext, alleged window tint violations were used to initiate the stops that generated the other lawsuits as well, and being ordered to take off her bra and shake it out to prove she wasn't hiding any contraband, Chandel Riley admitted to having a marijuana roach stashed in a pack of cigarettes. After some more verbal and physical abuse, Wilkie began asking if Riley was saved, and if she'd be willing to get back on the right path by being dunked underwater in a nearby lake. This incident, of course, was captured for posterity by Deputy Jacob Goforth, who has already been dismissed from this lawsuit. You know, that's interesting. I actually know a Goforth. So I wonder if there's a relation there. It's one of my ex's friend's family name. So that's interesting. So the lower court denied immunity to Wilkie, who apparently decided the best way to appeal this decision was to start breaking some rules about what can and can't be done at this stage of litigation.
He got a hard on, he got horny, he lost control, he went out of his mind.
So you can appeal a denial of a motion to dismiss, but you have to accept the facts as stated by the non-moving party and then argue that. Even if what's said is true, you still deserve immunity. The lower court's decision still stands. The arguments shoehorned into this appeal need to wait until he's in front of a jury. Believe it or not, that's not only appellate loss for Deputy Wilkie this week. The Sixth Circuit handed down another decision 4 days earlier. This one also involves Wilkie's partner in constitutional crime, Deputy Bobby Brewer, who engaged in another window tint violation stop that swiftly devolved into a host of rights violations. These are allegations as they appeared in the lawsuit filed by the driver and passenger of the vehicle, James Mitchell and Letitia Manafee. Wilkie handcuffed James, and the individual defendants took James to the front of their police vehicles. Wilkie then began to grab James' genitals. When James told Wilkie that he had an untreated and large hernia and that his actions were causing him pain, they jerked his arms high above his back and slammed his face down onto the hot engine hood, causing him injury. They then beat him with fists, knees, and feet, slamming him to the ground and continuing their brutalization. Wilkie and Brewer then removed the pants and shoes of Mr. James while still beating him. They forced his face back onto the hot hood of the same police vehicle and continued to jerk his arms high above his back and beat him. While Brewer continued to force his face back onto the hood of the vehicle and jerk his arms above his head, Wilkie donned a set of gloves, pulled his underwear down, and conducted an anal cavity search of Mr. James.
Do you take it in the ass?
The appeals court decision recounts many of these facts, as well as a few more, like the fact that James admitted to smoking weed in the car earlier, as well as the eventual discovery of an empty plastic baggie with drug residue in it. That discovery ended the cycle of abuse, which included Wilkie's half-dozen pain compliance strikes. He delivered to a person who wasn't resisting, was already handcuffed, and posed no actual threat. In this case, nearly any amount of force used by the deputies would have been excessive.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff I left out of this article. It's just fucking, just like...
Oh, it was insane. I'm glad that you trimmed it up, because this was just absolutely horrendous what this deputy did. What an abuse of power. He is such a fucking degenerate.
Yeah, he had a lot of fucking... Yeah, speaking of degenerates...
Y'all are a bunch of fucking degenerates.
Another one out of our fine state of Tennessee. Apparently, the Senate voted to ban chemtrails because what even the fuck?
Chemtrails.
Okay, so that was probably the only time I made a good use to play that clip, obviously, because it is about chemtrails. I'm just going to read what our legislators wrote here in the great state of Tennessee. Whereas it is documented that the federal government or other entities acting on the federal government's behalf or at the federal government's request may conduct geoengineering experiments by intentionally dispersing chemicals into the atmosphere, and those activities may occur within the state of Tennessee. So Section 1, Tennessee Code Annotated, Title 68, Chapter 201, Part 1 is amended by adding the following as a new section. The intentional injection, release, or dispersion by any means of chemicals, chemical compounds, substances, or apparatus within the borders of the state into the atmosphere with the express purpose of affecting temperature, weather, or intensity of the sunlight is prohibited. Where this came out of was TechDirt, and they of course are they're not on the chemtrail train. Now, I'm not, and depending on how you look at this story, you could say, well, you know, they're taking a stand on something. They're virtue signaling in a sense, right? It's exactly what the same reason they don't have fucking marijuana is not fucking legal. It's all virtue signaling. I think it's
massively, but I still have to say,
what the fuck?
Yeah, well. That's probably what we should have played for that clip, but I think we're ready for this.
I've fucking enjoyed every minute of it.
Okay, now that is not correct.
Ooh, no, it isn't.
No, I know, because I actually did play it correctly. It just didn't play for whatever reason.
I'm so fucking over this. I've fucking enjoyed every minute of it.
Yeah. Now it played correctly.
Now it played correctly. However, I also have to play this next clip correctly because I think this is the end. Because we're at the end of the show.
We
somehow managed to stonely stumble our way through another one of these shows.
Yes,
and so the ghost, yeah, it goes something like this.
Jordan fades back, swoosh, and that's the game!
Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. You're cool. And fuck you, I'm out.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Fucking embarrassing!
Fucking A, let's quit the swearing.